Hello, it is February 21st, 2016. You are looking live at Athens, Georgia and Jupiter, Florida. This is episode 632 of the Will Leach Experience Podcast on Sports on Earth. I am the aforementioned Will Leach. I thank you for spending part of your day with me as we are back with Allison Futter, who comes to us live from Jupiter, Florida, which is Marlins training camp. Is that the team that trains in Jupiter? It's the Marlins, right?
It's the one that stands out in my mind the most.
Of course. Oh, the Cardinals. That's right. The Cardinals and Marlins actually share a spring training complex. I forgot about that. You're there in St. Louis. How is it there? You are at the place that me and most of my relatives would love to be right now. How is it there?
It is warm and sunny, and everyone has a great deal of optimism for the upcoming season. So I'm watching Jordan Schaefer, I guess, try to become a left-handed pitcher, apparently. We're curious to see about if the rotation is going to be healthy. And I think that they have some concerns more than a lot of other teams about, like, man, this – I mean, they – like Lance Lynn and Adam Wainwright have to be what they were. And not what they were recently. This could be a long year for those Cardinals, but, I'm sure that's not what you want to hear, but they have a lot of question marks. So a few more than I kind of thought, like when I got here. They had photo day today. So we just interviewed like 15 people I don't know. We'll see, but it's going to be a interesting year for them.
Okay, we'll talk about that a little bit, because we're going to talk a little briefly about Dexter Fowler. We'll talk about the NL. We're going to do our weekly previews, where we're going to look at the NL Central and the AL Central today, and we'll look at the other ones. We'll do that today, and then we're going to talk a little bit more about some other stuff moving forward. Maybe Randy Levine if we have time. So hold your Cardinals questions, thoughts to yourself, pal, until I have a chance to weep as you get into them later. I do want to talk about something Cardinals related, though. It's what I wrote my column about for Sports on Earth today. Over the weekend, Dexter Fowler was asked by ESPN reporter Mark Saxon about Donald Trump's Muslim ban, specifically because Fowler's wife was born in Iran. He asked if he had any thoughts on it. Now, it is worth noting that Fowler did not say, as I mentioned in my piece, I hate Donald Trump. I hate Republicans. I think that guy stinks. What he did say is that it was very unfortunate because his wife is unable to go visit with their new daughter to visit their family in Iran. Her sister, who is an American citizen, was nervous about flying back from a business trip in Qatar, I believe, because of the ban. And he said, therefore, anytime it's difficult to go see family, it's an unfortunate circumstance. Well, it is worth noting, as I said, as I mentioned in my piece today, that I, as a Cardinals fan, the minute I saw Fowler said this, actually thought, uh-oh. And the reason I thought, uh-oh, is a point of debate among many Cardinals fans, I will say, a lot of people who disagree with me on this. My argument was, I'm not sure I say, uh-oh, if Fowler plays for the Giants. And it makes me very sad to say that, because I am a Cardinals fan. And I also think a lot of the best fans in St. Louis stuff and that awful Twitter account is very overblown. I think people like it becomes a fun pinata with which to kind of whack the Cardinals a little bit. That said, it is hard to deny when you kind of see some of the issues. You know, a lot of the Cardinals fan base, frankly, is in very rural areas. It's one of the strengths of the Cardinals fan base nationwide. They have fans in Oklahoma, they have fans in rural Indiana, fans in rural Arkansas, Tennessee, because of KMOX back in the day. And these rural areas are, frankly, the people that have provided the backbone for Donald Trump and the Muslim ban in the first place. Now, on one hand, you can say this is a social media thing, and this is another thing to make you too big of a deal out of. However, to me, what changed the story on this was when Fowler himself mentioned it on his Twitter page. I think he was, rather clearly taken aback by the reaction to what was a very innocuous statement. Like, again, he did not say, I don't like Donald Trump. That guy stinks. He said, it's unfortunate because I'd like to go be able to see my family members, and this ban makes it harder to do that. And there was a ton of backlash. I think there would have been backlash anyway. In fact, there's a site called Double Birds, which I think is kind of the defender of the Cardinals' flame on this stuff in a reasonable way, pointed out that the Chicago Cubs Facebook page said put something up about the Fowler story, and it had a bunch of Cubs fans yelling at him to screw off, leave Trump alone. So I think there's certainly a fan. I don't know if it's a specific fan thing, the Cardinals, but I do think the Cardinals have this kind of reputation, specifically this kind of worst kind of the fan base. And for a guy that, frankly, the Cardinals just signed to an $80 million contract for 5 years and is one of the most likable players in the sport, it was disturbing to me that not just that it happened, because we're all kind of used to it happening, but then the player sees it, is aware of it, and then feels like he needs to say something. You're at the camp now. Has this come up today? Do you have thoughts on this yourself?
I mean, honestly, I know that the beat reporters spoke to him about it. I don't think it was a huge issue. And when I'm here for photo day, I'm really like running around with our camera guy getting B-roll of everybody playing baseball. So, you know, I was not like directly involved with the comments that he was making. It's predictable. Everything is predictable. You know, I mean, there's a few things that were working against Dexter for this. The one where his team is located, to how unwelcoming it could be if you don't look exactly like everybody else who might have opposing views to you. I'll just say it like that. That is an issue in several places in Midwestern America. And also, it's predictable because if you make one, you can make a joke, you make a comment. I mean, it could be something so innocuous. If it's something if somebody sees it and they're not in agreement with it, if it offends them because they see their political views on the opposite side, then they tell you to stick to sports. If it's something that they agree with and they're like, yeah, then they don't say anything.
Yeah, then stick it to them.
I hear from these people, I'm like, you are the most unoriginal people on the planet. I made a joke about Sean Spicer I don't do politics on Twitter. But it was hilarious because the whole thing after that crazy first press conference when he was like, it was the biggest inauguration, period. And then it became like a meme, and then everybody was coming up with their own like period stuff from Sean Spicer. So I gave it a try and I said, you know, a hot dog is not a sandwich, period. And, you know, put his little picture up there. And of course, like, you know, there was some little crybaby, oh, Trump's overly sensitive, I'm a Trump supporter and you're making me mad because I can't handle any kind of intelligent conversation. So you hear from them. There was no way for like Dexter to win that. And I'm glad that he said what he said. And I don't care which side of the aisle that you're on. He was making a comment that's very true. It's happening. And for people to get so defensive about it. And like he said, he's like, we're human beings. He has every right to say whatever he wants. And if you don't want to follow him, you don't want to read him, don't read, don't listen to him, don't follow him on Twitter, go away. He will not miss you. His life will be fine without you. That's, you know, kind of how it's so predictable. There's no way to have rational people, because Twitter is an irrational place with irrational people who are hiding behind anonymity and can say whatever they want. And you can't win that. And so good for him that he still speaks his mind.
Yeah. And it's weird because I'm not sure, like, I don't even see the political statement of what he said. And it is funny how the people that are constantly screaming at you to stick to sports are the ones that are, if anything, the ones that are bringing the politics into this.
Right.
I mean, I think that's really frustrating. And I'll say that it does, as a Cardinals fan, this is something that we have been hit with a lot over the last few years. And I do think part of it is because of the rural fan base. I think the average Cardinal fan does not think that Dexter Fowler is a horrible person for saying anything like this any more than the average fan of any team believes that. I do.
If you're judging it on Twitter, you're getting the lower life form. If you're going to hear from people, it's just how it is. We all get it, you know, and now that we're like 10 years into Twitter being in existence, this isn't changing. You're not hearing from some intelligent person with 3 degrees that might want to pontificate and have a friendly exchange. That's not the people that are contacting you and me and him and all of us on Twitter. It's just that when it comes to having an opinion, I'm not saying like, hey, what time is the game on Saturday? I'm not saying those people. I mean, there's a lot of, I've met wonderful people on Twitter. And in fact, I have friendships that have evolved from people that were Astros fans on Twitter. So let me just say that. But when it comes to somebody like blowing up, you know, getting mad at nothing, which is basically what happens every day in everyday lives, and you hear from them on Twitter, that's what's going to happen. You're not getting the higher caliber of observer. Sorry, you're just not.
For what it's worth, I just feel I feel obliged to point out, I know a lot of very dumb people with 3 degrees. I just want to make that very clear.
Just
I know a lot of people, they could not change a tire.
right. Well, I
So,
can't change the tire, and I'm pretty smart.
okay, that's fine. Okay, that's fine. They can't write their name in the ground with a stick. I know you can do that. So,
Yeah.
but I think that's the thing. And to me, what elevates this and what makes this a little different, if you remember last year, there was this completely made up, now we would call it fake news. At the time, we just said, oh, they made this story up, because that was back when we cared when stories were just made up.
Right,
But,
yeah.
that during a Cardinals Cubs broadcast, there was Jason Hayward's first game back to play at Busch Stadium. There was a story, a completely made up story, basically made up by Cubs Twitter, that a racial slur had been hurled at Hayward. This was there was, they had heard it on the broadcast. There was no audio of the broadcast. ESPN, there was nothing like that in the broadcast, and nothing like that had actually happened. And but what's interesting is I thought that story, while completely made up, that's just like for Twitter nerds. Like that's just like media dorks like me that care about this stuff and care about perception and care about all these things. That can live in that little sandbox. But I truly believe Fowler mentioning this on his Twitter page and responding to it, and then later kind of feeling almost obliged to come out and say, "Hey, listen, I love the Cardinals. I need to make this clear," is very disturbing. Like it is very
Yeah.
disturbing that he would have to get to the point where he, after saying, "Listen, I'm sorry, my team doesn't own me. I can have my own thoughts, and I just said something. Why are you guys so mad?" Then to feel obliged a few hours later to, and again, you know of Dexter Fowler. You've talked to Dexter Fowler. Dexter Fowler is almost is just if you people don't know, is almost universally accepted as one of the nicest, most awesome dudes in the game. And
Right.
not just personally, but just to watch him play, there is joy to the way he played. There is that is what baseball is supposed to be. This is when people criticize baseball, they're not talking about Dexter Fowler. That's what baseball is supposed to be like. So the idea that it would get bad enough that an athlete would feel obliged to kind of respond to it and react to it, that's what changes it. And I think that that's what turns it into, listen, did this stuff happen to Fowler in Chicago? I don't think so. I don't think it happened to him in Colorado. I don't think it happened to him in Houston. And I think that that's the sort of thing that's going to be a problem for St. Louis moving forward, and somewhat fairly and somewhat unfairly.
The thing is, I mean, the thing that's really disturbing about it is that this is the age that this is where we're living now, and it's not we're not going back. 10 years ago, somebody had made a comment like that, and it got covered. And then there wasn't any way, or 15 years ago, there wasn't any way to directly like express yourself to the person who made the comment. And so that's where we are now. And I don't know where this is going to go in the future for anybody, because he wouldn't have any thoughts on this beyond what he said to the reporter. And then you just kind of move on, because it doesn't become anything more than that. And now it's becoming 5,000 people shouting really mean things at you over social media. That's not going away. And it really concerns me to where we are headed as society, as people who interact with each other, for athletes, for celebrities, but even everyday people. Because you know what? I just don't care anymore. Like, I used to care. I used to like actually like take things to heart. And now I'm like, okay, I'm so over this. I'm so over you. And it's unfortunate that it has to be like that, because that's not what social media was originally, intended for. And now it's just a way to really just express just to try to make somebody else mad and insult them. And I think it's really sad for these athletes. I really do. I feel like they should just delete their Twitter accounts, but it's up to them.
I guess we should all, frankly, delete our Twitter accounts also.
Yeah, it's really, it's like
We
I, you
really
know, I mean,
should.
honestly, I'm not gonna get, I don't want to get into a discussion about like the current events, but I try, like I had to stop looking at my new, the news icon on my phone and watching CNN, because like I'm getting so stressed out. And I'm like, okay, I have to focus, I have to sleep, I have to work. Like I can't, I'm not even reading anything going on anymore, because I'm just like so upset all the time. And this is what we're doing now. And it's, I mean, the death threats that like closers who blow playoff games get on their Twitter, it just, it's very disturbing to me. If you couldn't tell, it's very upsetting to me.
Yeah, it's and it's just, and again, I feel like obliged to note this again as a Cardinals fan. I do not, the Cardinals, I don't think are like quite obviously not the only team that this happens to, but I do believe, and I say this as a Cardinals fan, that you can read my column Sports North about this. There is a larger segment. I think the Cardinals have a lot of fans. They have a lot of national fans, and a lot of them are in the sort of areas of the country where are gonna instinctively and knee-jerkedly say, when Dexter Fowler says, "I don't know, I'd like to be able to go see my family," have a visceral response to it. I think a lot of Cardinals fans, not a high percentage of Cardinals fans, but those areas of the country, again, your rural Oklahoma, your rural Illinois, your rural Arkansas, rural Tennessee, they are more likely, if they are baseball fans, to be Cardinals fans than of any other team. That doesn't go the other way. It doesn't mean that all Cardinal fans are like that, but I do think it's something endemic, and I think that it's something that the Cardinals, I would argue, have been slow in addressing. But let's move on from that.
Yes.
Let's
okay.
Move on from that, because we'll talk about that all day. We have a weekly. We're going to start with it. The season's getting close enough now, Allison, that we can start doing some season previews. So I thought today we might look at the NL Central. Start with the NL Central. If we have time, we'll get to the AL Central. But let's start with the NL Central. First off, I you saw the I don't know if you saw the Pecota projections, but like they have the Cardinals behind the Brewers. That seems a little low. I still think the Brewers and the Reds are kind of in this rebuilding mode still. I think the Brewers are a little farther along than the Reds are, but I don't know if either one of them is going to be so relevant this year, unless maybe the Brewers trade Ryan Braun are going to be relevant to be a major part of the conversation. Tell me about what you're seeing there. Tell me about your worries about the Cardinals, the things that are making you nervous about them, the questions that you're seeing pop up.
I'm not worried or nervous about any of these
I am
observations.
okay, fine. I am the person that's worried and nervous about.
So a lot of my questions toward Mike Matheny and toward the pitching staff was like, how concerned are you, or not how concerned are you, but how important is it, that Adam Wainwright become Adam Wainwright again, and Michael Wacha, kind of emerge back into the rotation? And how about Lance Lynn? I mean, there just seem to be a lot of question marks. I'm not sure about how much depth there is coming up behind them as reinforcements in case there are some stumbles. Trevor Rosenthal, hey, they're going to stretch him out to be a starter. There's probably not room for him. Can he be a reliever effectively? He had such a bad year last year. You just sort of, they're moving Colton Wong. Okay, they tell him like second base is your position. So he's kind of going back to what he's familiar with. What kind of year is he going to have? I look, when I look from position to position, I'm not like, man, these guys are loaded. And so they will not be in contention for the division. They don't have what the Cubs have. So the Cubs should run away with it again, and the Cardinals will be in a wild card hunt. I can't believe Pecota had them behind the Brewers, though.
Yeah,
That
that's a bit much.
I firmly believe that St. Louis will end up in second place with a winning record in this division again.
Oh, well, if that's all you're worried about, I can handle that. I can handle if they're just second place in the division with a winning record. That's fine. That's about what I'm expecting out of the Cardinals
Okay.
this year. I don't think there's any chance they catch the Cubs. I feel like the wild card for them, frankly, to catch the Cubs would be the Cubs rotation, which is getting older, and is I think that there's still some questions about the fifth spot. Lackey is. You have to think Lackey's about to fall off. You think there'd be a possible, you feel like their defense can't possibly be as great as it was last year. I'm not sold on John Jay in center field for them. But, and everything went right for them last year, other than, of course, Kyle Schwarber, and they still won 103 games. You think if they took even a slight step back, the X factor for the Cardinals to have any sort of hope there would have been Alex Reyes. I think that would have been the thing where you can move him around, and if you can get in the playoff series, he's the guy that can be the thing there. Now you've got someone like Michael Wacha, who was supposed to be like the guy you can maybe use out of the bullpen, maybe start sometime. Now they're counting on him to be the fifth starter, and I think
Right.
that is worrisome. The question here is, do you think they're better? You think they're better than the Pirates?
Do I think they're better than the Pirates?
Yes.
Oh, yes.
Yes. Okay.
Yes. I do.
Okay.
I think the Pirates are going to have a lot of issues. I mean, I don't think that they like suddenly just fixed everything and that they're going to be like this force again. I mean, I think that the slow, I don't know, regression has been. Yeah, I see the Cardinals as still being a force. I see them as still being a tough team to beat at all times.
What do you think about?
I don't know. I mean, they're better than the Pirates, aren't they? Don't you think they're better than the
It's close.
Pirates?
I think the Pirates next year are they're closing. I think last year was a kind of their off year to kind of build back up. To me, a fascinating question with the Pirates is Andrew McCutchen. Not only does it's looking more and more like they're not going to re-sign him. He had a step back last year. I don't think they can trade him right now just because they're in a tough spot with him. Because I think they don't, not only do they not plan on re-signing him, they actually have outfielders that can come in and fill his spot. And also they moved him to right field this year. I don't know if you saw interviews with him, but he was kind of like, they didn't ask. They just kind of told me to play right field, which, again, if you look at the advanced stats and you look at the fielding metrics, it's hard to argue that's probably not the best. That's probably the right call. I think that clearly he should not be playing center field for that team. But Andrew McCutchen is the Pirate. Like this is if Andrew McCutchen ends up playing his entire career with the Pirates, which I don't think he will, but if he does, they're probably going to put a statue of that guy up. I mean, this is a guy that was great for them when they were not good, great for them when they've gotten good, and now I think would like to end his career with the team, and they're kind of treating him this way. It's always hard. I'm curious, someone like you, like you're more in more clubhouses than I am. When someone like McCutchen, who's kind of this unquestioned leader and this guy, all this really beloved, and everyone's really into him, and really respected by everybody, is it the smart baseball move is to say you got to play right field. You don't really have the speed anymore. But if he clearly doesn't like the idea and clearly notes I wasn't asked this, is that too much to kind of mess up the delicate balance of that? Or do other players look at that and be like, wait, if they're going to treat Andrew McCutchen, Andrew freaking McCutchen this way, how are they going to treat me?
Yeah, but you wonder, like, okay, so they didn't ask this. So what, like, how did that conversation go? Because if they ask him and he says no, they're still doing it.
Right,
So it's
right,
sort of
right.
like asking him, like pretending that he actually is like in on this decision-making process. I don't know. That might be a little bit misleading. I'd be curious to see like how the conversation was broached, not what we're reading about, but actually what actually happened. And I think that to answer your question, I think it just depends on the guy. I think that Andrew McCutchen is going to handle it like professional, and it's a huge blow to his ego, and I know that that's not easy, and it'd be very difficult to see him, watching a teammate play the position that he deeply wants to be playing. And when you are Mr. Pirate, then all of that is a little bit awkward. But because of the person that he is, the character that he has, I don't think it would be an issue. It would be for, other guys that might not be as mature and professional as him. So it's never easy. And I kind of just a situation that sort of triggered in my mind with the Astros, just when like Craig Biggio, when they signed Jeff Kent, I mean, and Jerry Hunsicker did not care that Craig Biggio had been playing second base for like 14 years for the Astros because he had an opportunity to get Jeff Kent and he signed him. And then they told Craig that they want him to move to center field. And it got ugly behind the scenes. It got ugly with Drayton McClain and with Jerry and with Craig. And then they all came to an understanding that that's what was going to happen. And Craig said all the right things and did all the right things. And then he was lauded. Oh, look, he's played now three positions. Look what an unselfish player he is. He moved to center field. He was fuming mad, but he handled it very professionally. And when Jeff Kent reported to spring training, they were very cordial and Craig was very welcoming to him. But oh my God, I mean, it had to have killed him. And those are the things that happens, but teams never, if they want, if sorry, good organizations that want to win, they do not ever kowtow to the players' demands.
Right,
Like
right,
if
right,
Andrew
right, right.
McCutchen says, no, I'm not moving, the Pirates are still moving him
Right.
because they're 100% doing what's best for the team.
All right. So we'll close up the National League Central with that because I think we all know the kind of runs. Because that leads us to the last thing I want to talk about, which is Randy Levine, kind of the opposite notion of this, which is Randy Levine, the president of the Yankees, who's kind of become increasingly a problem for them in the last couple of years. Well, basically, what happened was they went to an arbitration case with Dylan Betances. Their awesome reliever, the one great, like they're fantastic reliever who's also like relatively cheap. And they forced him to go all the way in to an arbitration case. They made him go all the way into an arbitration case. And it turns out that it just came down, I think it was like 2.8 million and like 2.1 million, 5 million, 3 million, like chump change for the Yankees and like no big deal. And not only did the Yankees push him all the way to arbitration, but then when they won the arbitration case, Levine comes out and says, I don't know why he thought this is, I'm paraphrasing because I'm frankly, I'm probably going to make more sense than he made, but basically, Betances, like, I don't know why Betances thought he was worth that much. Why would he come with that? Of course, that was, we were going to knock him back on that. Now, I got to say, as if the process of arbitration is not contentious enough, idea that the president would come in after all the hurt feelings of a case, come out and say that, it's worth noting that Betances' agent was immediately like, just so you know, we noticed the comments. I mean, eventually they're going to have to, I don't understand why a team would deal this way, not just in this specific case, but to me, every other sport, with the exception of football, because football is run by terrible people, is going toward the direction of understanding players have more power. We do not own players. In fact, young players are very underpaid, so it is good for us to foster that relationship as we go along, for them to do that so actively and open toward him was pretty baffling.
Yeah, and I would have to say, small correction, it wasn't really them, it was really him, for him to do that to Don Betances. Like Randy Levine was acting alone. It sounds like it was completely mortifying for everybody else in that front office. And I would believe, this is one of the most baffling, unprofessional things that I have ever seen a team, a person, a rogue person, whatever, do. It was unnecessary. There's absolutely not one reason, except if you there are plenty of teams that feel this way about the arbitration process and are insulted by the way that players are, the money that they're trying to get. You do not take that public. You have a grievance to air. You call Jim Murray, Don Betances' agent, and you tell him that he's a horrible person. And then you hang up the phone and you move on with your life.
Yeah, then you go off to the golf course or something and shut the hell up.
Oh my God. And they won the arbitration case. It was immature. My first thought was, are the Yankees not getting enough publicity and they're doing this so that everyone starts talking about them again? Are they crazy enough to do that? Are they not getting enough attention this spring training? And the fact that Betances is like a great guy too, and he's a mild-mannered person. He's not obnoxious. He didn't ask for any of this. And he had just sat through an arbitration hearing where they just crushed him. They just crushed him. They brought up every lie he shouldn't get paid. It's a terrible, ugly process anyway. But you cannot handle – I have no, it's almost like Randy, did he just lose his mind? I mean, what did he say? It's like me saying, I'm not the president of the Yankees. I'm an astronaut. They're saying like, Don Betances isn't a closer. He shouldn't want closer money. If I'm Betances, and of course he's got a few more years before he's a free agent, I'm running. I'm out the door at the second that I pitch my last inning for them as a non-free agent. I don't understand it. And it's embarrassing. It's embarrassing for the Yankees and really for the game.
Yeah. And yeah. It's worth noting, I think his roots are showing. Levine kind of made his name in Major League Baseball as he was a labor negotiator right after the strike. So I think that probably has something to do with it, too. I think he's kind of, but it is strange. He is, and I guess in a larger sense about him, he's becoming a problem, like, for the Yankees. I guarantee you Cashman was banging his head against the wall when Levine made those comments. And to me, that is, you know, you want to... It's funny because I've had this weird kind of feeling the last year, which is that, wow, the Yankees are actually making a bunch of really smart moves, and I think they're getting kind of become a kind of young, likable team. This is very disorienting. I don't know what to say about this. So, yeah. So I was like, wow, they're not actually that hateable. Like the Cowboys situation. Like the Cowboys were not actually that hateable this year. But then you would look at Jerry Jones and go like, oh, right, I hate you guys. That is where Randy Levine is going to be for the Yankees now, because I feel like that's a smart team that's making a lot of good decisions and send themselves up to really be to do something pretty great, I think, in the next 10 years. And we still got this yokel causing trouble for him.
The trade deadline last year, like, everyone was like, the Yankees probably had the best trade deadline of all the teams, and they were getting rid of their big money guys to get young talent, and they replenished their farm system. They're doing all these things that you never hear the Yankees doing. And so, yeah, they were actually becoming like a little bit more human, a little bit more normal. I don't understand any of this. Look, make no mistake. What he said is what a lot of executives feel and think after they get through the arbitration process. What he actually said was not anything out of the ordinary in terms of teams not thinking that the players are worth what the players think they're worth. God, to say it, to what they won the arbitration case. Yeah. And then to come out and say that, and then force, and then Del Betances felt like he was forced to then comment. There's a whole press conference. It was such a massive, ridiculous distraction. And it was such a, it was just so, such a Yankees thing to do during spring training, you know, like just the kind of the circus that just surrounds them all the time. It's unfortunate. Cashman, look at all the things that Cashman had to put up with throughout his career. And he's probably sitting there going, you know what? Once you think you've seen and heard it all, something will always take you off guard. And this had to have just floored him.
It's nice to know in a time of tumult and change, we can always find things to hate the Yankees about.
You know, it was funny because I was talking to some friends last night. And I'm like, it was almost refreshing for me, even though I felt sorry for the people involved, because there's like so much actual real life, like angst that everyone's experiencing. The fact that a stupid, controversial, like sports story just popped out of nowhere where it makes you mad and it gets you, you know, gets you going a little bit. And I'm like, oh, it's been so long since I've like gotten passionate about something that doesn't ultimately matter. Yeah. And that $2 million difference for a major league player who already has millions. Like, it was so nice. Like, oh, this felt good.
Yeah, this is, I'm angry about something that it has no effect on my life whatsoever. That is what baseball is about. That's what sports
absolutely
is about. Anyway, all right. Well, okay, we'll just stick with the NL Central. We'll talk about a different division next week. We both have the Cubs winning. We'll make it my order would probably be Cubs, Cardinals, Pirates, Brewers, Reds would probably be my order there.
Wow, that's really going out on a limb there, Will.
Listen, you had me convinced that you're going to be like, I think the Cardinals are going to be lucky to win 60 games this year. And then I'm going to start crying. I'm like, oh no, she's at camp. She knows something. All right. Okay, we'll be back. We're back for our weekly shows. We'll be back next week to probably preview some other division and chat about whatever new, fresh outrage has come across our desk. Allison, as always, make sure to follow everyone on Twitter. Allison Fitter, AllisonFooter. Allison, have a great week. We'll chat. Okay. Music is by the Sundogs, by the way. Give us a review on iTunes, all that stuff. Have a good week. Talk to you later.